The big one is here. It's the quarterback show. We're ranking the top 10 for the 2019 season, plus a discussion of why there's no longer a drastic QB shortage, the near-term futures for Winston and Mariota, the long-term futures for Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson, and are the Rams going to pay golf or not? It's all on the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I am Gary Gramling. He is Andy Benoit. We are at the second installment in our annual position ranking series. And if you, dear listener, were able to decode the innumerable clues we left around the internet, or if you just look at the title of the show before you press play, you know it's the big one. The second one this year is the big one. It's the quarterback show, Andy.
Guess where I am, by the way. Right, I'm in a city of a quarterback we're going to talk about.
Well, we're going to talk about like 30 quarterbacks. So
I'm in an NFL city. Or actually, it's a town. I'm in a town more. It's not Green Bay.
I can rule out Bozeman, Montana, Juneau, Alaska. You're in a room with, it looks like a wall in the back and a ceiling. Perhaps
it's a very standard hotel room that I'm in. Lake Forest, Illinois.
I was going to say Chicago.
Yeah, the Lake Forest is the day-to-day home of the Bears. Apparently, it's like an hour north of Chicago. I got here an hour sooner than I thought driving from Green Bay. And I think everybody in Lake Forest is worth at least $10 million just based on the housing around me. I've never seen a town like this.
I've never been to Lake Forest. I've been to Chicago a couple of times, but not Lake Forest.
Yeah, it's wonderful. I went to the Bears facility. The Bears facility was great, too. And I found myself, Green Bay was wonderful. I'm on this little Midwest trip, and I found myself saying to everyone I encounter, like, why doesn't everybody live in these towns? Like, Lake Forest, Green Bay, these are perfect. And they all have said, well, it just turned spring like 3 days ago. It was 40 and raining for several months before that. It's 65 and sunny. It's great here.
It looks like the sun is really shining through that hotel room window, and that's the best kind of sunshine.
But you know what I've done now? I've actually begun our quarterback show with a conversation about the weather, which means it's time for me to shut up and you to just dive into the outline and talk football.
The weather and a hotel room you're in. You'll have to talk about that painting over your left shoulder a little bit later. But we will have the rankings of the top 10 quarterbacks in football coming up later in the show. Did Mitchell Trubisky make it? Have to listen to find out. But as always with these shows, we will start with a discussion about some of the more general topics surrounding the position, as well as some of the most interesting guys playing it right now. And look, to start this show, we're going back in time a little bit. Let's say we're going to go back to 2015, Andy, and there was a crisis in the NFL. There was not enough quarterbacks. Everyone was complaining about the poor state of quarterback play in the league. Not enough quarterbacks to go around to the 32 teams. Fast forward to 2019 now, and we're going to talk about it when we get to the list and the rankings. There's almost like a full complement of quality starting quarterbacks, or if not quality starting quarterbacks, at least young guys who have the potential to become quality guys in the league right now. So basically, what in your mind happened to this quarterback shortage, and why are we in such a good spot with quarterbacks now?
I think the first thing to remember is that we're dealing with a small sample size. So in 2015, when quarterback play was down, I don't remember every starter off the top of my head that year, but let's say there were 12 really good stars, Super Bowl quality type of quarterbacks. Like, you could win a Super Bowl running your offense on their strengths alone. And now there might be 20 of those guys. I guess that's a pretty big jump, but we're still talking about 8 people here or there, plus or minus 2 or 3 on each of those years. I don't know if it's – I don't want to read too much into this whole thing, because I thought we did that back in 2015 when we were trying to establish the narrative that there is a shortage of quarterbacks. And now the narrative is there's an abundance of quarterbacks. And I don't know how true that is either, because what we have to remember to a certain degree, and it's not a full degree, Gary, because quarterbacks don't play against other quarterbacks on the field, but to a certain degree, your quarterback is as good, and it's relative to the guys around, to the other quarterbacks. Your quarterback's relative to the other team's QBs and what you can do with him to a certain degree.
are we at a point where coaching has sort of come along and raised this level of play? I know you don't want to engage too deep in this question, Andy, but it is. I think it's objectively the quarterback play across the league as a whole is better than it was 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I don't mean to say, well, we don't need to get into it too deeply, because it is worth getting into, and it's a smart conversation. I guess it's just not as simple as, well, there weren't very many good quarterbacks before, and now there are a lot of good quarterbacks, and yippee, look at that. I think your question about systems and coaching, or coaching to me implies systems, that's a really good point, Gary, because more teams now, and especially these young coaches, think about Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan, Adam Gase has not had the quarterback to work with yet, but he does now in Sam Darnold, so he's going to be part of this conversation. These younger offensive coaches, more than the previous generation, they tailor their scheme to what their quarterback is comfortable to. Or let's actually say it this way. Their scheme is inherently quarterback friendly. They build their scheme with the idea of how can we make the game as easy as possible for our quarterback. Then the better the quarterback, the more complex those guys can get with what they do. But it starts out with the first mindset is making the game as quarterback friendly as possible. And that was not the case with the previous generation of coaches, not all of them anyway.
Yeah, I mean, you also have these guys lasting longer, a combination of the rules and probably just improved training and fitness and whatnot. I mean, Tom Brady is going to be 42 in August. A generation ago, a 42-year-old quarterback, I mean, he'd be deceased for 5 years.
Yeah, it's true. I remember I was a kid, and Troy Aikman was in his early 30s when he retired, wasn't he? Mid-early 30s, like 33, 34, I want to say.
I was going to say 35. I'll look it up as you ramble on.
Well, it's not just that these guys are still playing. Tom Brady is obviously still playing at the highest of levels. We've talked about this before. This isn't anything new, but it probably can't be reiterated too much. Rivers, Breeze, Roethlisberger, these are still the elite quarterbacks of the NFL. It's not just that they're playing all those guys I just said are probably better now than they were in their late 20s.
And by the way, you're right. Troy Aikman turned 34 in November of his final season.
Okay. Yeah.
So yeah, you're right on that.
He's a good illustration of the game's changed as well. Isn't he kind of the Mendoza line for what you ask in a QB? Like, I know Donovan McNabb the other day was pointing out that he's better than Troy Aikman, which, by the way, is not remotely true. But if Aikman was like he wasn't a game manager, but he wasn't the guy in Dallas either. The offense ran through the running game primarily. His numbers were always good, but not great. He was a quarterback relative to the context of the entire team. He was in an era before you were building everything around making the game easier for your quarterback. That's kind of what I meant about that previous generation of coaches, the generation from the Aikman years, the 90s, the early 2000s to some extent. Those guys had a system and an entire offense, and now let me find the quarterback to run it, and we're going to do everything on offense, versus now it's, hey, here's my offense, and it starts with the quarterback, and then I'll find my quarterback. Does that make sense?
That does make sense. Yeah, I mean, you know, back then, especially a guy like Aikman was, game man. Everyone was a game manager to an extent, and Aikman was not in a very quarterback friendly. I don't want to say he wasn't quarterback friendly, because he had a great sporting cast and it was a well-designed offense. It wasn't designed for the quarterback to carry it the way that today's offenses are.
And I don't know if any, and I was young back then, so I can't fully speak to this, but I don't know if any system back then was this quote-unquote quarterback friendly. I mean, maybe the Dolphins and the Dan Marino stuff they were doing, I'd have to go back and study it at this point.
The run and shoot stuff, I was not very old either, but the Warren Moon run and shoot stuff in Houston sort of comes to mind, but I couldn't actually have broken down that offense at all in 1989 or whatnot, but... Let's talk about a guy who has a coach who has designed a very good offense that he has benefited from, and we saw we don't see this with everyone. We saw Jared Goff playing an offense that, you know, the system just wasn't quite right for him. He was also a rookie, you know, back in 2016. It just didn't work out in that last year of Jeff Fisher with the Rams. Now he has Sean McVay, and in L.A., this is the final year of cheap Jared Goff. He's going to be just under $8.9 million cap hit this year. The Rams are living right up against the salary cap. So I guess the question now is, what do you pay Goff when you have to pay Goff next offseason? You could just have him live on the fifth-year option, but you know they'll probably try and get something done with him. What would you pay Goff? Would you consider moving on from Goff at this point? I know we talked about this a little bit last winter, and I don't want to let the Super Bowl performance sort of overwhelm what we talked about with Jared Goff, but I don't know. What is he going forward, and is he kind of replaceable?
I would not replace him. It's an interesting discussion because if you're replacing him, it's strictly for the value of his cheap contract. So you'd be replacing him with a rookie, and I don't know if the Rams would want to do that given that they're built to be a Super Bowl team. Obviously, they're built to be a Super Bowl team right now. They are a Super Bowl team right now.
Yeah, I'm of the mind that basically you have the quarterback and coach combination. That's the most important thing in football, is having that coach QB combination. You have that with the Rams, and you just, that's something you pay for. That's something you spend on.
Because if you're not going to pay for that, then what's, again, it's all, we just said McVay and these generation, these younger guys that coach, they start with making the game quarterback friendly. So I guess it raises this question. Does that mean, if that's the starting place, does that mean that, of course, you invest in your quarterback because that's your coach's starting place? Or if he's making the game quarterback friendly, does that theoretically make the quarterback position more replaceable?
I mean, the other thing is, and we're not going to dive too deep into it because, it, quite frankly, it's too early to dive this deep into upcoming rookie classes, but 2019 draft class for quarterbacks, not very good. 2020 is going to be strong. 2021 is going to be headlined by Trevor Lawrence, who you know people around the league think could have been in the running to go number one overall this year were he eligible. There's an influx of young quarterbacks ready to come into the league if you wanted to hit the reset button. One other thing I'll mention with Goff, he's basically, in the McVay era, he's missed one game, that meaningless Week 17 game Sean Mannion started at the end of the 2017 season. We basically haven't seen the full McVay offense without Jared Goff running it.
That's true. When we saw it in Washington with Kirk Cousins running it, but he's, yeah. Cousins and Goff are, I think, pretty similar player. I think Goff's a more talented version of Kirk Cousins, maybe even much more talented, but stylistically, and maybe it's because they run the same offense with McVay, but it, you know, they're similar guys. Remember, though, it's one thing to say, oh, yeah, it's a loaded draft class, but you still got to go get one of those QBs. So Think about, you're the Rams, you have Goff, you're just in the Super Bowl. Let's say you go 12-4 next year and you at least make the divisional round. So you're picking number 24, 26, maybe later in the draft. You're not. It's going to cost you a lot to go get one of those quarterbacks in if you want to go in the draft. So is the value of trading two first-round picks to move up, how much does that offset the savings you get of whatever tens of billions that you'd have to guarantee your quarterback if you gave him a second contract? I that's why I ultimately think, Gary, at the end of all this, quarterbacks almost always cost what they cost. And it's like buying a car. You don't really get, you might get a good deal. You're never going to get a screaming deal on a car. So it's, if you want to drive an Escalade, you pay for an Escalade. If you want a Corvette, you pay for that. If you're fine with a Honda Civic, you pay for a Honda Civic.
And you know what, Andy? Because I'm such a nice guy, I'm not going to go into the rookie wage scale right now. And I'll just move on to the next topic.
Well, and also, I'm glad you're doing that. Remember, there's a collective bargaining agreement negotiation period coming up.
Yes,
so
that's
all
true.
This stuff we're talking about, which is also going to factor into what the Rams do. So, the more I think about this, the more I think they're going to pay Goff, because Kevin Dimoff, their president, Les Snead, their GM, McVay, they're going to sit around and say, well, if we don't pay him, what's the option? It's like, well, then we got to go find a QB, a young one, because if we're not paying Jared, it means we want a guy on a cheap deal. So we're giving up a ton of draft capital to maybe go get one, and even that guy might not pan out. But number two is, we don't know what the salary structure of the NFL will be after these new collective bargaining negotiations. We do know what Jared will cost right now, And we have a reason to believe that the salary cap moving forward will continue to expand because that's just what it's always done. So it's almost a safer move to make the big payment in Goff, who also is a known entity to you at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a pretty good point. You also make a really good point with the fact that they're probably going to be drafting at the end of the first round, certainly next year and the year after, you would think. So you're spending a lot of draft capital to come up and get that guy anyway. But let's talk about two guys who their teams will have to make a decision on them very soon. This is Marcus Mariota and Jameis Winston, the numbers 1 and 2 pick of, let me phrase that as the number 1 and 2 picks of the 2015 draft. Where are we right now with these guys, Andy? And essentially, I think these are guys where the question is more legitimate. Do you pay them? Because, I mean, Goff is worth keeping. I think we all agree Goff is worth keeping, and it's just a matter of what price and what it's going to do the rest of your roster. Mariota and Winston are both just huge question marks going into the year 5 of their careers now.
Absolutely. Let's start with Winston. The book on him is that he's a very smart QB, understands the game and full field progression reads. You can ask him to do that because he's always seen the game that way. And that's true. But what's also true is for a smart QB, he sure doesn't play very smart sometimes. He's a reckless QB. And that's now we get into a philosophical conversation. What do we make of that? I like a quarterback that's willing to make the tight window throws and attack the deeper intermediate levels. But I like a quarterback that also doesn't throw interceptions, and it's hard to find a guy that can where you have it both ways. That'd be a Aaron Rodgers type of guy, yeah, or a Drew Brees type of guy. So Winston, will he always be a guy who turns the ball over, and will those turnovers always be to the degree that they are now? And if you feel that the answer is yes, then what do you do if you feel the answer is yes? If it's no and you think, okay, we can get his interception totals down, I'm going to look up his interception totals while we're talking here, because he's got a lot of them. He had his interception percent of his passes as a rookie, it's 2.8, and then his second year is 3.2%, 2.5, and 3.7%, double-digit interceptions every year. He's good for about an interception a game, basically, which is too much. So if that's what he is forever, can you live with that as a team? Can you build around that long-term?
Well, I guess he get to see if Bruce Arians is going to coax anything more out of him, and not that, you know, Bruce Arians is obviously a very good coach, and not to term him as some sort of quarterback coaching god here at this point, but if Winston struggles under a second coach, I think it's just time to move on at that point.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it. That's fair. And it says off the field immaturity over the years, that doesn't help his situation mm-hmm. either. So I guess I agree with you on that. It'll be interesting because Bruce Arians runs a very similar scheme to Dirk Cutter stylistically. Yeah. And I think it's the right style of scheme for Winston. It's a deeper drop back scheme. The reason you need to do that with Winston is he's a methodical thrower. His release, it takes a little while to unfold. He's got some wind up to his motion. He tends to cover a lot of ground in the pocket. He's not Byron Leftwich, who was the most methodical QB you'll ever see, but he's much more of a Byron Leftwich style than he is a Jimmy Garoppolo style, a quick, compact, flicks the ball out type of guy. Now, Mariota, on the other hand, he's more in that quick throwing class, and you run a different system with him than you would with Winston.
How do you feel about Mariota at this point? I mean, it feels like the biggest problem with him is he can't stay healthy.
Well, and my concern is, and this is actually true with Winston as well, if you took just cut up some film, a few plays from their rookie year and then their second year, third year, fourth year, and you mixed them all together and then just random and played them randomly, you wouldn't know which plays are from which years unless you're looking at the uniforms or the field markings or something. But if you're just watching the quarterback, I don't know if there's a whole lot of difference between Mariota now and Mariota as a rookie. And that's the big concern. He can be slow to isolate and eliminate routes and reads. His mechanics are inconsistent, and his arm is not good enough to compensate for those mechanical inconsistencies.
Let's go slightly younger here. Let's talk about Mitchell Trubisky. To me, Trubisky is the most interesting quarterback in the league going into this upcoming year. I could see it going either way with him. I mean, he hasn't... what's it been? Basically, this will be his third full year as a starter going back to North Carolina, and he's had a different coordinator every year. Or sorry, this will be his fourth full year as a starter here, including that last year in North Carolina. So 4 years, the previous 3 years, all had a different coordinator. He was inaccurate last season. He was too inaccurate last season, considering the number of open throws that that scheme created for him. And I just kind of wonder how much of it is just the problem with having to adjust to another new system and the discomfort with the mental processing and what he was seeing out there last year, which kind of suggests maybe more reps in that system, you get better.
That'll be interesting to watch because we've talked about accuracy a lot. Can it be taught? Probably not. Can it be honed and polished? Probably yes. Winston and Mariota, when they struggle with accuracy, they tend to miss by a good margin. They really struggle. When Trubisky struggles, aside from a ball in the dirt here and there, which is not as big a deal as sailing a ball, by the way, because mm-hmm. a ball in the dirt's not going to get intercepted. Aside from one or two of those, he's really just off in a precision standpoint. His balls are still catchable, but you're right. He's not accurate enough. And that kind of scheme, and really in any NFL offense, precision accuracy is what counts. The NFL is a run after catch league. That's where a lot of your offensive productivity and your sustaining drives, that's what they derive from. So if you have an imprecise quarterback, you ruin your run after catch opportunities a lot of the time. So that does have to get cleaned up. The bigger concern to me, though, Gary, is once the Bears look like this fancy, upscale, high-tech offense because of all the shifting and pre-snap motions and different formations. Once the ball is snapped, though, they're a pretty rudimentary passing game. In fact, they might be the NFL's most rudimentary passing game. And coaches tell you how they feel about their players by the way they use them. And Matt Nagy indirectly is telling you how he feels about Mitchell Trubisky by playing that kind of offense. Now, that's why this year is interesting, though, because it's not unreasonable to think Trubisky would be asked to run that kind of offense given his inexperience, but he's not really inexperienced anymore. I think he's now officially a young quarterback, not just a brand new wide-eyed quarterback.
Yeah, it's almost like that last game last season, the wild card game loss to the Eagles. We all kind of forgot how bad Trubisky struggled in that game because he was so spectacular in the fourth quarter and especially on that final drive that set him up for the field goal attempt. But they scaled it back as the season went on last year, and I think that's what was troubling. But again, I could see him taking a big leap forward this year.
And what we don't know is if how much of their scaling it back had to do with the fact that their defense was just far and away the best in the NFL. And they could count on that defense to force turnovers and flip field position probably twice a game, if you're counting sacks and swing plays like that. So that's not going to be the case this year, I don't think. I think that we've talked about how big a loss Vic Fangio is for them. If that defense goes from great to merely good or merely very good, which I think it will, they're going to have to ask more of their offense, and then we really learn how the Bears feel about Mitchell Trubisky.
Let's touch on two more guys before we move on to the ranking segment of the show here, because they will not be in the top 10. But just two really intriguing physical talents who are very much in the early stages of their NFL development here. Josh Allen in Buffalo, they sort of got him a new supporting cast out there. And Lamar Jackson in Baltimore, where they have a new receiving core. And on top of that, it looks like it's going to be a fairly revamped offense in 2019.
So let's have the discussion of what mobility means at the quarterback position. And I'm not talking about like the Trubisky, we ought to say, is very mobile, by the way. That's probably the strength of his game, is playing on the move. But I'm not talking about that kind of mobility, not functional or highly functional quarterbacking mobility, but outright mobility. Because spoiler here, Cam Newton's not in our top 10. And if you wanted to take umbrage with that, you'd say, well, Cam Newton is the most dangerous down-to-down running threat at the quarterback position in the NFL. Now, he might lose that title to Lamar Jackson this year. They're different types of runners. But when you can leverage your mobility at quarterback on every single down and force the defense to have to account for that guy, and the domino effect you get with that with your offense, that's a notable factor, mm-hmm. and that's a notable advantage for a running game. The question is, how much do we value that in a quarterback? And it's a fascinating conversation because all these guys we're talking about, and this might be how they become runners, Cam Newton, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, they're all pretty up and down passers. They're erratic in accuracy. They're going to nail some. They're going to make some tough throws. Jackson, we'll see about what he becomes. But those first two guys, Newton and Allen, they're arm strength guys that will make big time highlight throws. And then about five or six times a game, they're going to leave you baffled with a horrible throw. So what's the value of that kind of QB? What can you do with them?
So I like the fact that, like you said, I like including the 11th man in the run game. And as you said, there is some value to that. The thing that sort of discouraged me about Josh Allen last year is I thought the scrambling became something of a crutch with him as opposed to you know, something in his back pocket that you can pull out, which is the opposite of the guys who sort of found that right balance, whether it be a Russell Wilson or someone like that or an Andrew Luck earlier in his career. But I don't know.
Because you're right. When Allen runs, he runs to run.
Yeah.
Russell Wilson runs to throw. And I don't love how much he runs. Our listeners probably know that. But I understand that he runs to throw, and that's his style, and he's great at that. Josh Allen often ran to run. He was successful with it. But all of his big scrambles, almost every one of them, came against man-to-man coverage, which suggests to me, and that's not unusual because man-to-man, the defenders are running to the receivers. If the mm-hmm. receivers are running away from the quarterback, there's going to be space that opens up for the QB. But I think if teams go more zone coverage against Buffalo, which they will, because that also makes Allen have to read multiple defenders when he's making his throws,
yeah.
I don't know if he'll be the same kind of scrambler. I guess what I'm thinking of with Josh Allen, Gary, is using him on quarterback power or read yes. options, designed run concepts.
Yeah, and look, I like that. I think it's a nice bonus for your offense. I think it's if you're building your ideal QB, it's probably not very high on your priority list. But you know, it is 2019. The rules of the game and the designs of the field and the offenses are made to throw the ball. That's how you win games.
I'd be 100% with you on that, except that the 2015 Panthers and Cam Newton's MVP season that year present real complications to me there, because and that suggests that year it looks like that's the outlier for Newton. Every one of his other seasons he's been mostly up and down. He's probably finished around 12 to 15 if you were to rank the NFL quarterbacks. But that one year he was number one, and it was a genuine number one, and they were 15-1. They were right in it in the Super Bowl, and if they had won that game and Newton had played better, you know, that we might see the NFL take a whole different look at how they value that position. So I don't know. I've always just kept that in the back of my mind because I didn't think Cam Newton could become an elite QB, and he was unequivocally an elite quarterback that year.
Well, what do you think in the end?
That's what I just said. I don't know what I think. That's why I'm wearing my heart on my sleeve for you here, and you call me out and make me have to say it all over again. I don't know what I think because the reason the Panthers were so good in 2015 is that their offense ran through Newton's legs, and they had this power running game that came off of the threat of Cam Newton. So there aren't a lot of Cam Newtons, though. And if Josh Allen, by the way, if he's to succeed, it's going to have to be with that Cam Newton route. There's no way he's going to just become an accurate every down passer over the course of the next 2 or 3 years. He's just too much of a wild stallion at this point. So I guess we get a chance to see it play out again in Buffalo, and I'll be interested to see how that goes. Same guys, by the way. It's Carolina's staff is Buffalo's yeah. staff now. McDermott's from Carolina, GM Brandon Bean's from Carolina.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. I just have a bad feeling that we're going to look back on Josh Allen's rookie year and for all the highlights and all the nice moments there were, did this sort of was this sort of setting back his development a little bit?
And my biggest fear is we're going to look back on his rookie year and say the same thing we said about Winston and Mariota, which this doesn't look any different than his fourth year. He had a ton of highs and lows, and that should surprise nobody. We knew he'd be that coming out, so it's just a question of how much can you tame that and then work around the, they're not really limitations that Allen has. They're more glitches that he has.
And what's, just touch on Lamar real quick. If there's one thing you'd like to see added to that offense, because this is going to be a multi-year process, but one thing you'd like to see added to that offense this year, what would it be?
Well, it's going to be, can I just say, an expanded passing game? All they did last year through the air basically with Jackson was run two read in breaking routes. So it was a high low route, a slant pattern. They did do some deeper shot plays, which are actually easier reads for their harder throws, but they're easier reads for a quarterback. So will they do some route combinations with Lamar? And I don't know. Also, I guess part B of that is how much do they really need to? If they're going to leverage his legs snap after snap, I would imagine they're going to play out of spread formations to create more space for Lamar's legs early in the run, versus if you bunch everybody up, you actually can create more run opportunities by doing that, because the more receivers and tight ends you have, the more gaps you present in the running game. But that's not really the style of running game. It doesn't give Lamar the space to accelerate, and his acceleration is what makes him so lethal.
Yeah. Yep. Lots of young guys in that skill position group, too. So, interesting year for Lamar. I think it'll be 2 or 3 years before we see it play out. But good step one coming up this year. Andy, a couple of quick programming notes before we move on to the rankings here. As you surely know by now, we, Andy and I, have started the position ranking series. We did linebackers last week. If you go about 3 shows back in your feed, you can get that if you missed it. We will be continuing the series for the next 2 months or so. So subscribe and get it all. You'll also get Jenny and Connor doing their thing with Albert Breer on Wednesdays, and Connor's Bad Football Movie series will continue to come out on Fridays. I don't know. They had Varsity Blues this week, Connor and Jenny. I think they're running out of truly bad football movies. Varsity Blues is pretty good.
Well, if people had seen the whipped cream bikini before Varsity Blues, I think that movie gets demoted a whole letter grade for most viewers.
Wait a second. State that again. You think the whipped cream bikini makes it worse?
I think that makes the movie. I think makes the movie.
So it's
just because of the novelty. I mean, first of all, if you're watching Varsity Blues, you're probably 16 and you're feeling a little older than you actually are. Mm-hmm. Second of all is the novelty. So why that's important is because now there's a pretty woman in a not quite real bikini on the screen. And that's great if you're 16 years old, speaking from the male point of view, of course. But the second thing is, I don't think I'd ever heard of the whipped cream bikini before that. And I'm sure everybody's got an uncle who said, oh, yeah, we do that in the 70s. But I'd never heard about it until Varsity Blues. And then all your friends are talking about, hey, there's a whipped cream bikini on it. And you say, what does that mean? And they say, just watch it. And that's Varsity Blues. That and then Billy Bob, the gigantic guy who is 10 times bigger than anybody actually ever is in high school.
Oh, that was a pretty good movie review, Andy. And a little history of the bikini there.
Much shorter than Connor's podcast, by the way. Connor, I'm coming for you.
I want to say one more thing about that show, because Connor always talks up the fact that they're there, they're drinking beers during the podcast. They're in the office drinking beers, which is that's a good liberating feeling. And people seem to like it, and the show goes well. But I mean, I just want to point out, Andy and I huff a good amount of paint every week when we tape the show, and you don't hear us bragging about it. All right. Well, Andy and I huffing paint might actually explain some of the rankings coming up here with the top 10 quarterbacks in the NFL. And I feel like I say it every time we do the show. I just want to make the point. The position rankings were by definition slotting certain guys above other guys, and that's how a ranking works. Some of these guys, for instance, Ben Roethlisberger versus Philip Rivers. I think, Andy, you and I both had them right next to each other. I don't know if you can't really make a real good argument for one being above the other. They're pretty much tied. I mean, I think there's a clear-cut top two here, and then you get sort of that second tier of like three, probably down to like 12 at this point, where you can kind of shuffle it however you want.
Yeah, I would say it's a clear-cut top three.
Would you put Luck up there?
Well, now you've spoiled who our third guy is. But
no, I shouldn't have done that.
I think I had to debate between Luck, Brady, and Mahomes.
So I actually want to start this one off by pointing out the eight starting quarterbacks who did not receive a single vote in our poll this week, and that would be myself, Andy, and Reed Foster, researcher extraordinaire, was the third voter this week. But eight guys got no top 20 votes who are starters. That's actually Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota, Andy Dalton and Joe Flacco, Lamar Jackson, Miami quarterback TBA, that would be Josh Rosen slash Ryan Fitzpatrick, Kyler Murray, and Dwayne Haskins slash Colt McCoy slash Case Keenum. So the two likely rookie starters here. But yeah, I don't know. It's like I said, it's a good group of quarterbacks in the NFL right now. That those eight guys are all pretty okay, right?
Well, I mean, we debated a half of them just a second ago. I guess they're fine, but once you list off these other 10, like, we list off the top 10 and then see how those other eight guys sound.
Okay, well, I got to do the others receiving votes real quick. And again, this is myself, this is Andy, this is Reed Foster. Andy's votes count double. We do it AP poll style. If you don't know what that is by now, I can't help you with it. But the others receiving votes from fewest votes to most, let's go with Mitchell Trubisky, Derek Carr, Josh Allen, Nick Foles, Sam Darnold, Eli Manning getting in there, Dak Prescott, Kirk Cousins, Jimmy Garoppolo, Jared Goff, Cam Newton, Deshaun Watson, Baker Mayfield, Matthew Stafford. Those are the guys who did not make the top 10 but got votes. Starting with number 10, Russell Wilson. And then we had a tie for eighth between Matt Ryan and Carson Wentz. We've talked about Wilson quite a bit on the show. Wentz, I was surprised Wentz was as low as he is. I actually had Wentz top five, but...
I did.
I think I had Wentz the highest in our ranking here. I had Wentz top five. You had him top 10. Reed did not have him top 10. But, I mean, to me, Wentz, it was just a matter of, you know, coming off the ACL, and then you had the back problems late in the year. And, yes, if the injuries continue, then you have a problem going forward. But a healthy Carson Wentz.
I would argue you've had a problem already, too. Wentz has been off the field for both playoff runs now. That's injuries at quarterback can't get more problematic than that. Just because they overcame it the first time doesn't change that you still got a problem with Wentz.
The back injury worries me. The knee injury doesn't. I mean, he took a hit. He tore his ACL. That's the way it goes sometimes, and it wasn't going to have a long-term effect in all likelihood. But a healthy Carson Wentz is easily top four on this list, right?
I don't know if I'd say easily. I mean, easily, that's a hard thing to say because then you're saying, oh, he's clearly better. And I think he can be. And I think he is. And I thought he was in 2017 before he got hurt. But you'd be saying if he's easily, you'd be saying he's clearly better than Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, Rivers, Roethlisberger. I don't think you could say with that kind of definitiveness. I would agree with you, though. He's as good as just about anyone in the league.
All right. Anything about Matt Ryan? We didn't talk about Matt Ryan a ton last year because the Falcons fell out of it. But, you know, it was a second straight disappointing year for the Falcons. What do you make of Ryan at this point, now 2 years removed from the MVP season under Kyle Shanahan?
I don't know if Ryan is it's possible that Ryan is really just the greatest system QB that you can think of. And I mean that in the sense that he's relative to the system around him. I don't know if the system takes on the shape of Matt Ryan the way that Kansas City's would Mahomes or something like that. I think when the system is rolling and the talent around him is very good, Matt Ryan is an excellent field general. But if you ask me, well, what does Ryan do best? What about him in and of himself scares you? I don't know if I'd have a great answer for that. Matt Ryan is good at everything. Great at some things, awful at nothing, and that's how you become about the eighth best QB in the NFL versus Tom Brady, who I think is great at many things, awful at running, but that's about it. Ryan is good, not great, and I mean that more, I don't mean that in as negative a way as it sounds.
All right, the next three here at seven, Ben Roethlisberger, at six, Philip Rivers, at five, Aaron Rodgers. Rodgers, I guess, was a little bit tricky to place this year. You know, if you think it was a Mike McCarthy problem in Green Bay, you're about to find out whether it was or whether it wasn't. But you were just out in Green Bay, Andy.
Yeah, I was. And I ate in the lunchroom at one table over from Aaron Rodgers, for what that's worth. And he looked very good sitting with his offensive lineman at lunch. I don't know what's going to happen with Rodgers. I cannot wait to see. I think that's the most interesting story of the NFL this season, and maybe in several seasons, because he never had to play on time in Mike McCarthy's offense. I mean, relatively sure, but it was not a precision timing offense by any stretch of the imagination. And now with Matt LaFleur, it is almost exclusively a timing and rhythm offense. And I can promise you, Gary, that when Rodgers passes up open receivers in that system, he's going to hear about it. And I'm not sure he ever heard very much about it when he did that under McCarthy. And there would be games where he did it a lot. And sometimes he made better plays, but I don't think that's a consistent way to operate as a franchise QB.
Number four, Drew Brees.
Hey, one other thing on McCarthy, Gary.
Yeah.
I want to ask you this. Let's say this goes well with Rodgers, and let's say he has a resurgence, kind of like Matt Ryan did once he got comfortable in Kyle Shanahan's scheme, because Ryan's really the only other star veteran QB that I can remember who had a system overhaul after he turned 30 years old. So let's say Rodgers has that, and he's an MVP, and he's you know, the Packers are all up there at the top of the league. Will we talk about whether McCarthy in that era – ruined Rodgers' career to a certain extent? Hey, that sounds so much worse than it is, because they won a Super Bowl, I know. But Aaron Rodgers has been regarded as the most talented QB probably that ever lived. And here he is at 35, and he only has one Super Bowl ring. He only has one Super Bowl appearance.
You know, Greg Bedard, who used to work here at the MMQB and is now doing Boston Sports Journal, and he had covered the Mike McCarthy Packers back in the mid-2000s. But he used to say Mike McCarthy played a huge role in developing Aaron Rodgers into what he was, in developing young Aaron Rodgers. So I think it's, even if he didn't like the McCarthy offense, which is perfectly fine, he gets some credit for helping Rodgers develop into what he is, because Rodgers ultimately is not what he was coming out of California.
That's probably fair. That's a good point by Greg Bedard, reiterated by Gary Grameling. Has Rodgers overachieved or underachieved? Are his accomplishments commensurate with his talent? If his career ended today, would that be a career fulfilled of its potential?
I think so. I think we're really negative about it now, because he's coming off of a couple of down seasons 2 years ago because of the injury, and then last year was just a flat-out bad season. I think when we look back, we get so carried away with the rings and all that, and I don't know. I think he has properly achieved. How's that? He has achieved, period.
Yeah, that's fine. And we do, you're right, we do get carried away with rings, and I've probably done that a little bit here. We think that rings are the end-all, be-all, but when you're talking top-shelf quarterbacks and in a league that offenses are shaped, and really entire teams are shaped more and more around the quarterbacks than ever before, I don't know if it's the worst thing to treat rings as the end-all, be-all.
It's a thing.
It's a lazy thing. I'll go with that. Yeah. We've had this Eli Manning conversation. It can be a little bit lazy.
Yeah, and I mean, he has put his team in contention to win rings. And then when it comes down to, you know, single game, single elimination in January, sometimes it just doesn't work out. But next two in the countdown here. Number four is Drew Brees. Number three is Andrew Luck. I'll just say flat out, I had a really tough time placing Drew Brees, and it felt especially silly, because if the Saints had, let's say the Saints just went 9-7 last year and missed the playoffs, you know, we'd probably be placing Brees second or third as far as quarterbacks last season. He was his arm strength was problematic by the end of last year, and you wonder how much of it was a hit he took. I think it was in the Dallas Thursday night game that they lost, but I don't know. You just get a sense that the end is near for him, not only because that's just the logical outcome for a quarterback on the other side of age 40, but his arm strength was just not good enough in January last year.
Well, yeah, I'm looking at his passing numbers, because that offense, when the Saints were, they were explosive for much of the season, and when they were, Breeze was humming. But when defenses forced the Saints to really dink and dunk, Breeze will do that because he is a computerized QB in a great way. I mean, he reads the field like an automated computer would. But when you force him to dink and dunk, they can become a constricted offense at times. And there was that stretch in weeks 11, 12, 13, 14, around there, where they were dinking and dunking quite a bit. So it'll be interesting to see Drew Brees' play. I mean, if he stops now, he's obviously first ballot Hall of Famer. I don't know. I bet you we would have had this conversation 5 years ago, is what gives me pause about it. I've never been a huge arm strength guy.
Yeah.
So when he gets older and he's not a big-time athlete, he's not great arm strength, well, then what is he? And then you think, well, he's going to hit a wall at some point because he's only going to get weaker from here. But he hasn't. His field acumen and his vision have offset a lot of that for a number of years.
And Andrew Luck at 3, I thought you could legitimately argue, let's say, after the first third of the season last year, so like last 10 games of 2019, Andrew Luck was the best player in football. Excuse me, last 10 games of 2018, Andrew Luck was the best player in football last year, and he did it with a supporting cast that just isn't terribly impressive.
I would agree. His offensive line has gotten better, and he has not had a great offensive line before. He's never, I don't want to say he doesn't need it, but his pocket movement and downfield vision and courage from a muddied pocket are as good as I've ever seen. And now he doesn't have to rely on those things. They can be his third down fallback options, which is really what they should be, rather than his every down number one tool in the toolkit.
And the top two, which I haven't spoiled yet, we had these guys reversed, but number two is Tom Brady. One first place vote, that is from Andy Benoit. Number one is Patrick Mahomes with two first place votes, including myself. I guess, Andy, make your case for Brady over Mahomes, and then I'll do the opposite.
Well, Brady just beat Mahomes in Mahomes' building with a much less talented offense than Mahomes had around him. Championship game.
I think that's fair. I would also argue Mahomes did not have a bad game last year, and I always come back to when they beat Baltimore in Kansas City last year, and that was a game in which they were out-schemed. They sort of lost the X and O's battle in that, and Mahomes, you know, everyone remembers the it was the no-look sidearm throw and all that stuff, but he was spectacular in that game. He made a number of plays that only he could make to win that game. And, it'll be fascinating to see what he is this season, especially if there's no Tyreek Hill, and especially now that everyone's had an entire offseason to game plan for him. But I don't really know if there's I don't know if there's a way to defend him effectively.
I don't disagree with that. He's as good as I've seen. One thing that is interesting about him, and I voted him MVP last year, so I'm not banging the table saying Tom Brady's better than Mahomes, but MVP and who's best, to me, are two subtly different things. And it's a regular season award, too, by the way. But the one thing about Mahomes is every game, there are about two or three throws that he just misses on. And it's not a huge deal, obviously. He still more than overcame that last year. But I wonder if that gets ironed out. I don't know how you stop him then. And I don't know if it will get ironed out, because his style of play, there's going to be a little bit of a margin for error with it, because he's just such a freestyle QB when he goes out of structure. He is a really good freestyle QB, and I love that he doesn't rely on that. He's going to have to really walk a fine line there. A lot of Aaron Rodgers, for example, I think he goes out of structure too much. Mahomes is in a different system than Rodgers, and I hope that that system keeps instilling discipline upon him, because you can't be an out-of-structure QB every snap. But if he becomes a more consistent passer, believe it or not, and he's got room to be, I don't know how you would stop him.
I think it's only fair that he does not iron out those problems and therefore can be stopped. Otherwise, it's going
to
be boring.
He's just going to have to institute like a left hand. Like, he's going to have to throw five balls left-handed every game if he irons out those problems, because otherwise it's just a competitive disadvantage. That's too much for any team to overcome. The NFL would have a problem on its hands.
They'll make him throw left-handed, and then he'll fall to like number six on our countdown.
Remember, he threw left-handed once against Denver week 3, I think it was, last year on Monday night. And at the time, I thought, oh great, here comes Joe Tessitore is going to go crazy about this, and this is going to get way overplayed. Anytime a quarterback throws left-handed, we say, wow, look at his moxie. And it drives me nuts, because never has a quarterback made a huge, huge play throwing left-handed. He's only made a decent gain.
You know who made a huge throw left-handed? Steve Young.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Good point. Yeah. Off-handed, Ben. Thank you. Okay. Everybody loves that guy that does what you just did there.
I
ought to be on Twitter. Are you on Twitter? You'd be
that
a great
was a,
tweeter.
That was a good joke for like a Leno monologue right there that I just did.
Yeah, duh, we don't have time to. I know what you're doing, and we're not going to. Gary's mad because I said, and readers can email their when they agree, they can email in that they agree. I said Leno was better at monologues than Letterman, and Letterman was better behind the desk than Leno. Leno ran, to put it in our context here, Letterman was like the Aaron Rodgers kind of comedian, and Leno was more of a Drew Brees. Just give me the offense. I'm going to run it exactly as it's designed. No frills and thrills. And then Letterman was the freestyle Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers type.
Hmm. Yeah, now Leno was more of like a, I don't know.
Remember when it's trendy to bash Jay Leno when in fact he was a very, very good on TV comedian night after night for many, many years.
He was a workmanlike comedian. I'll give you that. He was a Matt Cassel of late night hosts.
That's
that?
Horse garbage, and you know it. Horse that's, garbage. That's right. That's two metaphors right there. That's how bad that was.
Horse is garbage.
That's why Leno's on TV, and I just run a podcast with you.
Oh man. Let's do the lightning round real quick. This will be a legit lightning round. These are a lot of either ors here, Andy. And whatever you do, do not explain your answers. Just say them. First one, more likely to be with their current team in week one of the 2021 season. Cam Newton or Derek Carr?
I would say that's tough. I hate to play it because Cam Newton, that's injury speculation that we'd be engaging in there. I will say Cam Newton, though.
I'll also say Cam Newton. Pick one, Kirk Cousins in this Gary Kubiak-influenced offense or Nick Foles in John DeFilippo's offense down in Jacksonville?
Kirk Cousins and Gary Kubiak's offense.
I also agree. This is the one you're going to hate, but I'm going to make you do it anyway. Where do you think we'll be placing Kyler Murray on next year's ranking?
He'd be others receiving votes.
Where, though? Like 11?
We don't have to say that's the whole point of the others receiving votes. Otherwise, it's a top 20 ranking show.
I structured the question wrong.
I know you did. Wasn't tight enough.
18.
I'll give you one. Let me give you one.
Yes.
Who would you rather build around in the immediate future and then in 3 years from now, and it's probably one and the same, but who would you rather build around, Baker Mayfield or Deshaun Watson?
I'll go Baker.
To me, that's not a hard one.
I'll go Baker.
I will go Baker as well. Let me ask you this way then. Deshaun Watson or Sam Darnold 3 years from now?
I'd probably go Deshaun at the moment. I'm very optimistic about Sam Darnold, though, but I gotta see it.
I do, too. Watson is willing to turn it loose downfield Now, he's willing to turn it loose way downfield. Where he needs to get better is turning it loose on schedule at regular timing downfield routes. So think dig routes and stuff 15, 18 yards downfield, the Drew Brees type of throws. He needs to become more refined in that timing. But Darnold obviously does too. And Darnold might be – my sense is Adam Gase with Darnold's going to want to have a lot more defined reads to play to Darnold's offbeat style of QB. I think Darnold's a little bit more of a freestyle QB than a structured QB. And I don't mean that to say that he couldn't be a structured QB. I think Watson, though, his success will become will stem from playing within structure.
Yeah, I mean, Watson's also coming off a weird year with a terrible offensive line and kind of a strange offense. We'll talk about that offense this offseason and what they're doing with him out there. But last one, give me your breakout quarterback of 2019, guy who, let's just say, jumps the highest in our rankings.
Well, it'll probably be Jimmy Garoppolo by default. If he stays healthy, I think we have reason to believe he would be on the cusp of top 10 at least. Those second-year guys are also an easy answer. Darnold and who else would it be? I mean, Mayfield, I guess he can still improve. Darnold, to me, is probably the other answer, I guess.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised we didn't talk about Jacoby Brissett anywhere in here, but I still have a huge crush on Jacoby Brissett.
Yeah. Do you think he'll be starting somewhere next year?
Next year being 2019 or 2020?
2020.
I hope he should be. I think Jacoby Brissett's a top 20 quarterback right now. We just don't see enough of him to actually validate that or say it completely.
Okay.
I think he's easily a top 20. I think he can be top 10, low end of top 10.
Oh.
Arm strength, and he's mobile enough. You run read option with him.
Okay. I'll keep an open mind. That's big, though. Top 10 is big. Top 20 is you're a good quarterback if you're top 20.
What we ought to do is at some point, top 10 QBs just going off of pure physical talent, which Mahomes is probably one, and then it's a conversation on a bunch of guys from there, and you get into styles of quarterback. If you're doing that, though, Jacoby Brissett's probably in that ranking.
Okay. I mean, that's fair enough. But also, if you're just doing physical talent, what's the point? That seems like an unwise thing to do when assessing quarterbacks, right?
Well, I mean, what do you do when you're drafting them? Because they're not finished products when they come out of the draft.
Yeah, okay.
And also, you get into arguments about what kind of physical talent. Deshaun Watson and his style of talent versus Jacoby Brissett, for example, big, strong pocket passer, or a Carson Wentz for his style of physical talent. There's different types of talent in quarterbacks. Also, I'm disappointed we didn't talk about Matthew Stafford in this show, and I'd want him in the show, and he'd be top three or four in physical talent, not number one or two.
You had the outline. You were just sitting there in your Chicago hotel room watching old Jay Leno monologues.
Lake Forest hotel room, and you're still the point guard of this show, Buster. I go off of you. I don't work off the outline. Brandon's got his headphones off. We gotta wrap this up.
He is. This was look, it was a long one. It's a good one. It has to be a long one. It's the quarterback show. Brandon gave us the thumbs up. Brandon's gonna have a producer mic next week, by the way. We're gonna learn all about how he saw the movie Species at age 5.
Well, we already thought we know that. He went with a sibling.
Well, he told us, but he's gotta tell the world.
He has to provide the details, you're saying.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, that's going to be a wrap for this show. Thanks to researchers Reed Foster and Ryan Taylor. Reed was our third voter this week, so extra thanks to Reed. Thank you to producer Brandon Nix, and thank you, of course, to Jay Leno for the years of laughter. Most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to this episode of the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. You guys are the best. We'll be back. More position rankings coming up. Keep sending those. I know we keep on saying it, but we are going to do the all-average team. We're going to find a pocket in there to do the all-average team on one of these shows. So keep sending those in. Talkback@themmqb.com. You can get us on Twitter or on Facebook. To get our shows, as well as Albert Breer's show featuring Jenny Brentis and Connor Orr, and the Bad Movie Podcast, please, we beg of you, subscribe to the MMQB Podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, radio.com/10things, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers, and we will see you guys next week.